So you have a lot of grandchildren besides.
Well, yes. Last July went, I just happened to be back there because I had to see about these 160 acres of land. They offer me $100 an acre for it now. And
this is in northeast?
Yes, in northeastern New Mexico. So I went out there, and while I was there, I decided to take a look at the old homestead where I was born. And that place is owned by Carl Hannigan. Well, I know Carl Hannigan all my life. He's a man about 20 years older than I.
He's the person who lived there when the family lived there?
Well, he lived, he was just a little nobody at the time. He had a small ranch on the other side of the mountain. And which now he is the king of Baldy Mountain.
Oh.
He owns everything now. Through land frauds and all that, he owns everything. Well, I drove up to his place and I found a big land. Oh yes, he says. Well, we were talking, you know, just talking. He says, you might as well stay here a few days, he says, and visit with me. And I want to show you, he says, my spread, my race horses and all this and that. And, we were out in the corral looking at his horses, which he has very, very good horses, very good stuff. And he's got an airplane. I mean, he's a big boy. And we were talking out there, and he says, well, his grandson, a little kid come out. He says, granddad, he says, is this dirty Mexican giving you a bad time? Or hard time, something like that. And so the old reptile, he just laughed. He says, I wonder where this kid gets all this, where they learned this. I says, they learn it from you. I said, because you teach them. This is what you teach your children. I says, I don't blame the kid. I blame you. So we got off the wrong foot from the very beginning. So, well, he says, you might as well stay here a few days. And I said, no, thanks, Carl. I'll be going. I want to look at my piece of land out here. And maybe I'll sell it. I don't know. I don't think I will, but I might.
Is any of the buildings there that your family used to live in?
Well, yes. The old building still stands. And it's a big, big outfit. The name of T.O. Owns it.
Oh.
They owns millions of acres.
Yeah, so I make you mad to go and look at.
So I decided to stop at the old homestead, and I just drove in. And I'm just nosing around, looking at the place where I was raised, where I was born and raised. And them waiting to throw me in jail for trespassing. And
did you tell them that you were just looking at it?
Well, I told them. I told them who I was. I said, I was born here. It's a matter of curiosity. I'm just looking at it. Well, the deputy sheriff, he was a very nice fellow. He says, well, I got this. He says, I have this piece of paper. I have to take you in. And so you just go ahead and drive your car, and I'll follow you into town. And then they throw me in jail. Of course, I was out, nothing flat. And by this time, the people in Raton, they have seen me on television to them many times. They've seen me on the newspaper of my struggle on the Alianza, the poor people's campaign. So the minute I'm released from the sheriff for trespassing, I was picked up by the state police. for an investigation.
Oh.
Back to jail I go.
I
was released by the state police and I was picked up by the FBI for investigation.
They really had you in mind.
And so they finally run me out of town. My town.
This is Raton.
Yes, Raton.
Raton.
They run me out of town. And the Chief Tundra, Chief of Police, I'm going to get those guys. I'm going to make their life so miserable it's pathetic.
Oh,
and I mean no violence because I'm not a man of violence, but I have ways. I have ways to agitate them, and I'm going to make them meet their own words. Now, meantime, the restaurants won't sell me nothing to eat. I had to get a kid. I had to get a little boy to give him money to get me some hamburgers. I was starving to death. So the Chief Tundra told me, he says, we don't want your kind in our town. You are a Tijeranista and we don't go for that here. He says, I'm giving you a chance to get out. Or else what? Shoot me on the back, I says, like you shoot my, you have to shot my ancestors. I says, that's the only way you can get me. But you cannot hold me in jail because your law is not strong enough. I break no laws. I said, I'm recruiting. I have been recruiting for the Poor People's Campaign. Not for a communistic organization, not for Reyes Tijerina, not for the Alianza. But by the churches that put up the finance for these people to go to Washington. But you want to have the wages here at $3 a day. And you don't want these people to go to Washington and have some good results. And you know that I'm responsible for it, as for getting these people to go to Washington. So now you want to shoot me in the back. And you probably will, because that's the only way, that's your type. That's the only way you do things. And but they marched me out of town.
They took you out?
Yeah, they took me out. Okay. Now, the police said that they were there to protect me. And there were people with clubs and stones and bricks trying to get at me. So I told them what MacArthur told them in the Philippines. I shall return. And says, I'll be back. But when I come back, I will not be alone. When I come back, I'll have a lot of people with me. Now I'll go, because I can't fight you. I'm alone.
So did you get any people to go from there?
Well, I came back here, see, and so we've been so busy, one thing after the other.
You mean to the Poor People's March, was there anybody
mm-hmm.
went from that time?
Well, yeah, there were about six or seven of them went from that time.
I know the number from Las Vegas, I remember.
And, so, in the period of 3 months, I was picked up by the law, including in Santa Fe, 36 times.
36?
In the period of 3 months. I finally went to cargo. And I told them, lay off on me. You don't have nothing on me. I wrote to the chief in Washington, D.C. of the FBI. And I told him, lay off of me. What I do legally. I don't break no laws. I have never been in a riot. I have never stepped out of the law, period.
So
leave me alone.
You fought for your country.
And so.
What did Cargo say? Did he have any?
Well, you know something. After I talked with the governor, they haven't bothered me for anything. Matter of fact, the other night I was coming in from Mexico. I wasn't driving my car, but I was driving another man's car, and the tail lights of the car were out. another year.
My friend, the dog, is out here.
Oh.
Hello. You hear me? He barked. He called me out.
And the state police stopped me. He says, you know, he says, your tile, well, he stopped me. And he came out with his book in his hand. And, well, I wasn't aware that the tail lights were out. And when I rolled down the window, he looked at me, he says, well, hello, Duque. He says, we exchanged some small talk. And this was this Martinez, you know. And, well, he know that I am one of the Alianza's boys. So he says, you know, he says, you got your taillights out. He says, yeah. The fuse must be burned out. Something's wrong with it. He says, if anybody stops you, you tell them that I said it was okay for you to go into Santa Fe and have them fixed in Santa Fe.
Now, cargo must have been.
So I'm in the hands off. I mean, they don't touch me. They don't bother me at all ever since then. Well, see, my only reason here in the North, and this is the only reason, because in Mexico, see, Mexico to me, that's my beloved Mexico. Mm. To me, Mexico is everything. In Mexico, I am happy. And financially and otherwise, I'm better off in Mexico than I am up here. I don't make no money here. Mm. Here, it's only a struggle, jails, and all this. But in any event, the cause comes first. The cause of anything comes before father and mother, wife and children. And the cause is the Alianza, the land grants. And I am here to help Reyes Tijerina. I came here to help Reyes on the struggle. For no other reason I ever come to the North. But I came to the North to help Reyes. And I shall help Reyes to the very end. I shall be with the Alianza to the very last drop of blood.
Well, it must be great to avenge that bitterness of all that land taken from your family.
See, evidently I have been looking for Reyes Tijerina a long time. Perhaps I've been looking for Reyes Tijerina since the day I was born. I have been looking for a leader that would lead my people, to wake my people up, the Indo-Hispano, to get them out of the darkness, to be men of pride, to be able to stand up for their rights. At the time that I gave the lecture in the university, that was almost three months ago, that I made gave the lecture of the university concerning that painting that I did of the Alianza, the Liberty, Victory, and Justice. The newspaper played it up. The university gets a hold of it. Now they want me to give them a lecture. I gave a lecture of 50,000 people there. And I told them, you people are lucky people. You were born white. You were born rich with a silver spoon in your mouth. Food and lodging has never been denied to you because your father was a Spaniard and your mother was an Indian. Well, it has been denied to me. And for so many years, the Indo-Hispano, they finally gave up. They finally submitted. And they wouldn't talk. They wouldn't defend their rights. We don't want what these people has. We don't want what the Anglo has. We want what belongs to us. And everything, it's in reference to the Constitution. United we stand, and justice for all. But do we have justice for all? No. There is no justice. So it's high time that we demand the equal rights and justice equally, no more, no less. Now our people are beginning to realize this. But it was Reyes Tijerina that opened their eyes. Before then, they didn't have the guts to go up across the street and stand up for themselves. They do it now. They're beginning to do it. So therefore, in this struggle of the land grants, and because I am the last of the Aragons, and because I am the only one that I know the truth of what my people has been through, how the lands were taken away from them. As I told Reyes, I came here to help you. And I'm with you all the way. And that's the only reason I'm up here in the north, to help him.
Do you think that that the legal status of the land grant is going to be able to stand up in court?
I think so.
You do?
I think so. because really, well, we have known this all the time. Legally, this republic, which is a new republic, this part of the country was not conquested. The Spaniards didn't come here and grabbed everything. They made a deal with the Indians at that time. And the deal was share and share alike. We, Carlos II, who gave permission in the 15th century, that's in book 4, title 6, and law 6 of the laws of the Indies, where Carlos the sixth king, Carlos the second rather, the king, gave permission for the Spaniards to marry the Indian woman. And this was a new race, the beginning of the Indo-Hispano, the Spanish and the Indian. The Spaniards went back to their country, but their children stayed here. When they went back, these grants were legally of the the inheritance from the Spaniards and the Indians. Now Mexico comes in and grabs all this land. Never belonged to Mexico. Mexico just grabbed. So we are under the dominion of Mexico. Then the United States take it away from Mexico, and we are under the dominion of the United States. So in other words, we are in between two thieves, two powerful governments that has taken our land, has taken our freedom, has taken our culture, they took everything, and we are just orphans. We don't know which way to turn. That's why Mexico has opposed Reyes Tijerina, because look what's going to happen to Mexico. Mm-hmm. Mexico will be losing 42 states of their republic, because actually they do not belong to them. That belongs to the new republic, because a king only marched to the gates of Mexico, of Mexico City. Therefore, Mexico only has six states of Mexico that they actually have independence from Mother Spain.
That would be the southern states?
The southern states of Mexico. That's all the republic. But 42 states of the republic and two territories belongs to us, belongs to this republic, to the new republic and the laws of the Indies. Now, on the other hand, now I'm not too well versed on all the laws of the Indies, but according to Jerry Nall, actually the United States, this according to him, this is not my saying, but this is what Jerry Nall says, that the United States actually only have the 13 colonies, because they only have independence from England for the 13 colonies. The rest of the United States has been grabbed by exploitation, by land grabbers and land frauds, and that's how they accumulated the whole United States.
Yeah.
Whether he is right or wrong, I don't know.
Well, I'm sure that was the Louisiana Purchase. You know, and they took the whole middle country from New Orleans up to Minnesota. They bought it from Napoleon.
Want another one? Lexicano? I like these things.
Mm-hmm.
I like them.
I do too. No, I think that could very well. Now the Indians are claiming their land. They could claim, the Indians could claim a swath of land from the Mexican border up to the Canadian border from their treaties, from just the treaties.
Yes. That's what Jerry was telling me, that
some Indians propose that they demand that land and have an Indian nation. It would be continuous from the Mexican border to the Canadian border. It would be some of the richest land in the Middle West. And it's their land. In fact, a lot of it is reservations already. They could just take the land in between the reservations. They'd have a nation.
It's a hard struggle, but I believe it'll be a worthy. Well, that's just about.
I think it's already been it's like the Negro movement. You know, it's already roused up the feeling of national pride, of the dignity of the race. It's been a great lesson for the Anglo, for the white people. To even see this. My God, can you imagine
that?
Nixon endorses a nuclear umbrella net around all of Asia. Isn't that awful? That everybody testified against it? That's a terrible thing. He might drop those nuclear bombs.
Another cycle. You start all over again. Now, the war is way back there in the dead past. Mexico, it's in the dead past. Now, is the struggle of the Alianza. Well, I'm struggling for it, day and night. I'm figuring out the angles of what we're going to do. And all this. When this is over, well, we say, well, for instance, we're victorious. We got our land, we got everything back. Fine. No, that's not over. That's just another cycle.
Yeah.
Something else, we have to go into something else, and that's a way of life.
But you want a rosy life? And you'd be bored to death with a rosy life.
I don't think I'll live 24 hours in a rosy life.
I'm sure you
because I don't know. I don't know that kind of life.
No. Nothing in it.
It's been a struggle since I was born. Yeah, man, one thing after another.
That's why you're alive, because you...
But then, on the other hand, people like me, well, we couldn't leave otherwise. If there was nothing to fight for, I guess I'd drop dead. See, sometimes I admire and I envy. I go back there to them hills, to the, or back there where I was born, and I know people there that's been no anywhere, they've never seen anything, they don't know anything, but they're happy.
Are they? Are they just sleeping? Or are they happy?
I mean, they wake up in the morning, they eat, they work, they raise their kids, their grandkids, and on the same environment, the same old farmhouse, the same thing.
You don't think there's a strain of melancholy in these people, though? I don't think that they're... I noticed that in Mexico. Most sad and melancholy people, aren't they? Underneath?
Yes, but obviously, if you take my brother-in-law, I have a brother-in-law, he's a German. He's a big German. He's been married to my sister now for over 30 years. And
does he live back there on the land?
No, he's in California. Oh. Now this man never went to war. He's been on the same job for close to 30 years, I guess. He works for the Navy. He don't drink. He don't smoke. He goes to church on Sundays. And he never had it bad. Nobody ever pumped bullets in him. He never went hungry. He never struggled for anything. And yet the man is old, so old, and beat up.
I've
That's beautiful.
That. Mm-hmm.
For no reason at all.
Yeah.
Here I am. Sometimes I'm afraid to drink water because I'm afraid that I'll leak with so many bullet holes in me. I mean, I had it. And here I am, ready to fight again.
Looking good.
Now what's the matter with these people? What kind of material
that.
Are they made?
I've noticed that about women, though, too, that the well-kept women, you know, they
yeah.
So old and worn out.
Beat up, yeah.
Yeah. Keeps you young and healthy is a struggle.
Like El Pecador, when I was a kid, I was his boy. He claimed me, I was his boy. He had made up his mind to make me as tough as he was. He was a tough old guy.
Didn't he ever have a woman that was as his equal, was a, I mean, tough and alive as he was?
No, I don't think so. I don't think very many women could Keep up with him. He would stop. I've seen him be a whip man on the street with that bull whip of his.
For what reason?
For reasons, as one time there was a fellow that that had molested a young girl, and he whipped him on the street with a with his cap of nine tails.
Was he an angel, or was he?
No, this was a Spanish fellow.
Spanish. He sounds like a great person.
But he never said a decent word.
You mean he was a swearer?
He swore up a storm. a lot of times I remember him and I laugh. I remember what he would say.
Did he speak English much, or did he speak?
Not much, but he spoke English.
Could he swear in English?
He swore like a sailor. And he could speak Indian lingos for North America. He could speak good Navajo. Mm. Good Navajo.
But did he trade with the Navajos a lot?
Oh, yes. He got along very good with the Indians. Real good.
Was he dark when he was young? Handsome?
No, he was a light complected. He was a light complected Spaniard.
Oh.
Gray eyes.
But big.
But he was big, big chested man. Huh. He had the most beautiful beard I ever seen on any man. It was all curly.
Oh.
You know, curls.
Oh.
Beautiful beard.
What color was it when he was young?
I don't know. I guess he was reddish blonde.
Then it turned white.
But it turned white.
White hair too?
White hair too.
Been a handsome devil.
He was handsome. He was a handsome man. He was so happy when I got that place in Jalisco. And, God, he looked good.
Hmm.
And, I bought the cattle, and, the horses. So he chose a black stallion. And he was riding in front of his man.
Hmm.
You know, when they were bringing in the cattle, he looked good.
Mm.
And that horse, he pranced and danced around like he was also proud that that El Pecador was his master. he was a good-looking man, and he knew horses.
Did he ever have any children of his own at all?
No children. Never shared any children. His wife died young, but he never married again.
Mm-hmm. Strange, a handsome man, I can have more luck with women. You had some very good relations with women also, a person of your, handsomeness. You seem to have solid relations with your wife.
See, it's like I said many times, when I cash in my chips, when the time for me to go, you know, I don't leave nothing behind. I had what I wanted. I've seen what I wanted. It's just everything. I had it bad, I had it hard, but I had it good.
Mm-hmm.
Also. So I don't leave nothing behind. I lived. Of course, my destiny, I believe in destiny. I'm something like Napoleon. I believe that there is a destiny.
Well, I believe so too, but you make a lot of it too, yourself.
But then on the other hand, like Diego used to tell me, you make your destiny.
I think so.
See, my destiny,
Well, you could have died many times.
If I'd have let him...
If you'd have submitted to it.
In Belgium, I don't know, I guess the reason I didn't die in Belgium was because I was so hard and so mean that the devil himself wouldn't have me.
So you gave up God.
I had a friend. Matter of fact, we're still very good friends. A Catholic priest, Father O'Brien. He was in the war with me. And he's in California. He has a parish in California now. Very good friends. After I got so bitter, see, it's not what a person is or what a person wants to be, it's what they make of them. They made me this way. They made me hard, they made me bitter. When I was wounded in my Monte Cassino, which it was not too bad, I got patched up like I always do. The priest came to me, Father O'Brien, and he pulled out his little black book, and he says, "What can I do for you?" I said, "There's nothing you can do for me." He says, "Get you straight with God." I said, "Look," I says, "why don't you put your book in your pocket and pick up a machine gun? That's the only gun. That's the only God there is." I said, "You can't save your own hide and you're trying to save me." Now, I talked to him that way, and he was my friend.
Try to argue with you?
No, he didn't. He just lit a cigarette and gave it to me and walked away. After the war, when I was in France, in the hospital in France, he came to see me. Now, this man never talks religion to me, which I don't believe in religion. I mean, religion, the Catholic religion, or the Pentecostal religion, or the Protestant religion, whatever it is, I respect a person for what they believe, but I don't believe in it. If I want to go to church, to me makes no difference if I go to the Catholic church or the Protestant church. I am not bitter anymore. I'm not hard that way anymore. Not after the war. I believe that there is a greater power than myself, whatever that may be, whatever that is. And I let it go at that. But during the war, at that time, I was hard. I had given everything up. Now, religion, I don't know who's right and who's wrong. The Catholic says that they're right. the Protestant says that they're right. I don't know who's right or who's wrong. All I know is that there is a higher power. Greater than I, greater than anything.
I don't see how anybody comes out of seeing all of that death, you know, that mayhem and destruction, can possibly live and look. I really don't understand how people can feel that.
Now, like I went to Colorado last summer. I went to see one of my boys in the hospital. He's in Fort Lyons. He's been there since the war. And I'm sorry that I went to see him. Because, say, he lost his marbles completely while we were in Africa. In the very beginning, he lost his marbles. Now, he is... He's no longer a man. He's not longer a human being. He's a walking zombie. He feels no cold. He feels no heat.
Did he know you?
He knows no nothing.
He didn't know you.
Nothing. Oh, the most beautiful thing. And I mean, among him, there's hundreds. There's thousands. These are the perils of war. A lot of those boys that were in the Japanese concentration camp. They're there for life, walking zombies. They're just
they
worse than animals.
Now. They can keep them alive now so long with all the drugs and everything.
Well, they keep them alive, but why? Now, sometimes, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I have no right to talk this way. But sometimes that
Well, they would probably be...
I believe in...
They would be dead now if they didn't interfere. I mean, the body would take care of it, but they keep people alive, so artificially.
Sometimes I believe in mercy killing. Sometimes I do.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I have no right to talk this way. Good God, in the... Letterman General Hospital in San Francisco, when I was there, they had a little fellow. Well, he was little then. At one time, he was a big man. But they had chopped him up so bad that he was very little. Now, he had been in the hospital 30 years from the First War, First World War. He had contacted some kind of a disease. So they start chopping him, his legs, his arms.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I was there, he had no more legs, he had no more arms. Now what could they take from him unless they cut his head off? They had him in a basket. They feed him, they bathe him. They had him on diapers, shave him. And he was meaner than all hell. He would cuss and swore at the nurses and at the colonels, the generals. He didn't care.
I didn't think so.
And he didn't give a damn. And he was the meanest.
But you see, that's an artificial life. He would be dead long before they didn't keep him alive just for fun to see how much they can do.
But why is the law of this country like that? Why didn't they just give him a shot and ease him off? Why keep torturing the poor creature? In that respect, I believe mercy killing.
But all you have to do is leave them alone and they'll die. You know, you don't have to do anything. He wouldn't be alive in the natural state. But they just, they can keep them alive indefinitely.
That little old man here, General Cole, came in there one time. And he cut General Cole out, but good. Everybody was standing in attention, and the little guy was...
He You're the only one who has the right.
Nobody could do anything
they
to him.
Take any more away from it.
Now this walking zombies that they have in hospitals, this mental hospitals, such as Simmons, Lyons, and all that. I never seen anything that beautiful. I'll never go see him again.
No. He doesn't know you. There's no use.
No use.
Doesn't know anyone. Know any of his family.
Sometimes it makes me a little mad when these people are talking. Maybe they were in the service. But I don't care who it is that went through heavy combat. That person didn't come back the way he went.
No.
There's something wrong with him. Either physically or mentally. But they didn't come back the way they went. Are not on heavy combat. It's impossible. Something had to give.
Well, I know men who are in the First World War that still have terrible mental nightmares, and they manage maybe to live, but they suffer mentally. All my generation killed in the First World War. Every young man that I knew was killed in the First World War. I was 18
in the First World War.
Mm-hmm. And all those all that generation that I knew.
And especially then, those poor guys that came back, those that came back, made it back, they just turn him out like turning a bunch of cattle out. No protection whatsoever. There was nothing for them.
No.
If they were crippled, it was too bad.
Yeah.
At least in World War II, well, we came back, and at least we had hospitals, we had pensions, compensations, and all that.
Even the GI Bill.
The GI Bill. Well, we got a lot more than the First World War. Man got. Just like I say, if it was my destiny that I had lost this leg and I had everything that happened to me, by golly, I'm glad that it happened on the line of duty.
Well, you couldn't have afforded it.
Because I'm well taken care of. Really, financially, I'm well taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's not enough for me.
This bone trouble never comes back now.
He never has. Mm-hmm. Never bothered me. It's been over 20 years.
They don't know any cure for that, really.
Apparently, they don't. Mm-hmm. But they... the Indians... down there, why?
I was beginning to study some of the Indian medicine. The university is studying the Navajo medicine now.
One morning I was laying in the bed and I heard my mama holler to my daddy. She said, "How high is the water, Daddy?" Sleeping in the willow trees, cows in the water up past her knees, 3 feet high and rising. How high is the water, Mama? 4 feet high and rising. How high is the water, Papa? is 4 feet high and rising. Ain't gonna look through the window pane. The bus is coming, gonna take us to the train. Looks like we'll be blessed with a little more rain. We'll be high and rising. How high is the water, mama? 5 feet high and rising. How high is the water, papa? But it's 5 feet high and rising. The rails are washed out north of town. We gotta head for higher ground. Can't come back till the water goes down. 5 feet high and rising. 5 feet high and rising. That orange blossom special, bringing my baby back.
Just one too many morning and a thousand miles behind. But just one too
Chima's Hill, 250 men, but only 27 lived to fight back down again. And when that fight was over, and when Old Glory raised, among the men to hold it high was the Indian, Ira Hayes. Oh, nothing, Ira Hayes, he won't answer anymore. Not the whiskey-drinking Indian, nor the Marine that went to war. Ira Hayes returned the hero, celebrated through the land. He was wined and speeched and honored. Everybody shook his hand, but he was just a Pima Indian. No water, no crops, no chance. At home, nobody cared what Ira had done, and when did the Indians dance? And then Ira started drinking hard. Jail was often his home. There they let him raise a flag and lower it like you'd throw a dog a bone. He died drunk early one morning, alone in a land he fought to save. 2 inches of water in a lonely dish was a grave for Ira Hayes. Call him drunken Ira Hayes, he won't answer anymore. Not the whiskey-drinking Indian nor the Marine that went to war. Yeah, call him drunken Ira Hayes, but his land is just as dry. And his ghost is lying thirsty in the ditch where Ira died.
Bigfoot, Bigfoot, your mini-conjugan,
is mourned and remembered here in South Dakota land. Bigfoot was an Indian chief of a peaceful Indian band, a band of many conjure Sioux from South Dakota land. Bigfoot said to Custer, "Stay away from Crazy Horse." But Custer crossed into Sioux land, and he never came back across. Then Bigfoot led his people to a place called Wounded Knee, and they found themselves surrounded by the 7th Cavalry. Bigfoot, Bigfoot, rise up from your bed. Many conjure babies cry for their mothers lying dead. An accidental gunshot, and Bigfoot was first to die. And over the noise of rifles, you could hear the babies cry. Bigfoot, Bigfoot, it's good that you can't see. Revenge is being wrought by Custer's 7th Cavalry. Bigfoot, Bigfoot, it's good that you can't see. Revenge is being wrought by Custer's 7th Cavalry. That smoke hung over the canyon that cold December day. All was death and dying around where Bigfoot lay. And farther up the canyon, some had tried to run and hide. But death had showed no favorites. Women, men, and children died. One side called it a massacre, another a victory. But the white flag still is waving the day of Wounded Knee. Bigfoot, Bigfoot, your many-conjure band is mourned and remembered here in South Dakota land. Bigfoot, Bigfoot, your many-conjure band is mourned and remembered here in South Dakota land. Sharecropping, and these are sharecropper houses, bungalows here. Most of them are what they call shotgun shacks. That's three rooms in a row. Front room, the middle room, the back room. Now each one of these houses had a barn, a chicken house, a smokehouse where the farmers, they raised their own hogs and cured their meat. And they had a mule, 20 acres of land here. The next house, just up the road, the line, the property line was halfway between the two houses. They all had 20 acres of land to begin with in 1935. And this is one of those, you call it a canal, it's a drainage ditch. This is ditch 40.
Are these the banks that they...
These are some of the banks that that my daddy and all of them were cleaning off when I was a water boy on the River Piang.
I just seen way over there, the
boat. It used to be a cannery that sat right there. There was a... Dice even had a cannery, and it had a nice bank over there where the Dice Theater is. The only original building on the circle is the administration building. There's the Dice Theater where I saw all the Tex Ritter movies and the Sunset Carson and Gene Autry movies. There he is. Mm-hmm. There is Frank Huff.
Mr. Huff.
Get out of the car, Jerry.
Get out. Hey.
Can I trap him?
I will.
She's alive.